I'm Christine Gallagher. I'm 35 years old. Today is Saturday, June 12th, 2021. I'm in Baltimore, Maryland, and I'm talking with Travis Henschen, who is a former coworker and very good friend.
My name is Travis Henschen. I'm 31 years old. Today is Saturday, June 12th, 2021. I'm in Baltimore, Maryland. My conversation partner's name is Christine Gallagher. She's a very close friend and former colleague.
So we're going to talk about our shared work experience and a little bit about how we came to our workplace. And then our plan is to talk about a project that we did together. We're both teachers, and we worked at a high school together. So Travis, how did you come to work at Cristo Rey, where we worked?
Yeah, so, I mean, backtracking a little bit, so Cristo Rey Jesuit High School's in Baltimore. Both sides of my family are from Baltimore, but I grew up just north of the city in northern Baltimore County, where I attended a public high school, Hereford High School. And I had a teacher there named Dominic Smith, who you know.
Yes.
Who's now, you know, he continues to be friends with many people in our circle. When I had him as a senior, I had sort of taken all of the Spanish courses that the school offered, but he happened to be teaching French that year. So I decided to just pick up a French 2 class.
As one does.
Yeah.
I've never taken French before.
I just found him to be a really nice person. And I went off to college. I wasn't planning to get into teaching. I wanted to go to law school or become a foreign service officer. So I was on debate team and learning languages. But over time I had been tutoring students, and I just started to realize I had this interest in working with adolescents, and I loved teaching and tutoring. So sort of out of the blue, one time when I was on break, I think it was a spring break, I was actually driving around Baltimore City with some old high school friends. And we stumbled upon this new high school called Cristo Rey Jesuit, which is in Fells Point. And I didn't know much about the school, but I remembered that Dominic had, after he left teaching at Hereford High, he had gone to work at Cristo Rey as a founding teacher. And I think he really stuck in my memory because in high school at Hereford, I was closeted as a gay man, boy at the time. And he was one of the only, actually he was the only teacher who ever, said something in class when homophobic remarks were made. Like I remember this time he just stopped the class and he told a story about his own friend. He grew up in Ireland, and he talked about his friend who committed suicide, and they suspected it was because he was being bullied, and that he was closeted. And so that story really left a mark on me. And it just made me remember him, even though I only had him for one semester. So anyway, back to this spring break in Baltimore, driving around with friends from high school, we stumble upon Cristo Rey Jesuit High School. And we say, hey, that's where Dominic works. Like, let's go say hi. So we walk into the school, walk into the main office, and we explain that we used to have Dominic Smith as a teacher. Is he here? Does he work here? And they're like, oh my God, yes, we love Dominic.
Which is a common refrain when anybody, you refer to Dominic Smith to anyone, it's always, oh my God, I love him. He's just the type of personality that gets along with so many people.
Yeah, exactly. So we went and talked with him. I ended up getting a better sense of the school, and I felt drawn to the mission. The school was set up to, as you know, to for underserved populations in Baltimore. And we can get into that. But the so after that, I decided I wanted to, you know, explore teaching. And I was still a college student. So I reached back out to Dominic through email and asked if they ever hire interns at the school. And he wrote back and said, well, you know, we haven't really done that per se, but there's no reason why we couldn't. So he connected me with the founding principal of the school, Tom Malone. They hired me as an administrative intern. So I did random tasks. So that's how I ended up first working at Crystal Ray. And then I came back after that internship a few years later to be a teacher, which is when we met.
Mm-hmm. So Travis and I started, we started at the same time. And my path to teaching was somewhat similar in the fact that I hadn't even considered being a teacher really. Like that was never really on my radar, but I figured, I found my way to it some way or another. And that way was, I did a volunteer program after graduating from college, as you know, on my schedule, I don't know if you know this part, actually, on my schedule, when I arrived, I was working at a high school, but I wasn't supposed to be teaching, but there was this thing that said UCC on my schedule every day. Have I told you this story before?
No.
Okay. So
UCC?
I didn't know what UCC was. Like, I had gotten my schedule before I had moved to Phoenix. And, you know, I was looking through all the materials and, like, couldn't figure out what UCC was. I knew that I'd be working in the office and helping with a number of programs around the mission and around the religious identity of the school. And so I'm sitting at my desk, like, maybe the second day, and I turned to the guy who shares the office with me, and I was like, hey, Tim, what does UCC mean? And he's like, no one's talked to you about that? And I was like, no. And he was like, oh, it means understanding Catholic Christianity. And I was like, okay, what's that? And he was like, oh, it's the freshman theology course. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And he's like, oh yeah, nobody told you that you were teaching? And I was like, no, I guess that announcement got lost somewhere. And so I went in, and it was only a one semester course, and I wasn't teaching until the second semester. And so they wanted me to observe this other teacher a number of times who taught it in the first semester. And so I went, somehow I ended up there. This is such a crazy story. I don't think I've ever told you this.
No, either. I'm shocked that you haven't told me this before.
Yeah. Like the day that I ended up in the class was the sex ed day. And I was like, okay, here we go. In a Catholic all boys school. And like little old me who had gone to like a Catholic all girls school and was like terrified of high school boys. And like walk in and we're doing sex ed. And I was like, oh my God, I have to teach sex ed to 14-year-olds. I'm not ready to do that. Spoiler alert, I skipped that when I got around to the teaching part. I didn't talk about that. And so I'm sorry to those 28 boys that I had in that first class. But yeah, so I taught this class and it was crazy. And like, I mean, I'm still in touch with one student that I had that year. I mean, I'm still in touch with a number of, you know, students that I had worked with, but one in particular that I had in my class that year. And I ran into him a couple years ago at a conference with students. And I was with Akeem, who's one of our common former students, and Richard, who's another common former student.
Richard Ortega.
Yes, Richard Ortega. And we sit down with this kid, Flavio, and Flavio is like, going on and on about what a bad teacher I was. And it was just so embarrassing. And I was like,
wait,
oh my God.
He said this while you were doing your...
No. This was 2 years ago. Oh. I ran into him with Akeem and Richard at the teach-in. And he was going on. And like, I knew I was a bad teacher. Like, I knew I was a bad teacher. And I thought the reason that why I was a bad teacher was, it was because I didn't have like an academic background in the content. Because sure, I had gone to Catholic school my entire life, but going to Catholic school your entire life doesn't prepare you to teach Catholicism in a Catholic school. And the school didn't necessarily understand that. Yeah. So, flash forward to, I keep saying flash forward, to, I thought I needed a better content understanding of theology if I was going to be a theology teacher. But then I didn't want to just teach theology. And so I went and I got my master's. And then I was applying to jobs. And I think you know this, that I applied to be a history teacher at Cristo Rey.
Well, I had applied to be in the internship office at first.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like, I did not get even a call back about that job. And then, serendipitously, I guess, I got a call in July from the school. And when I first heard the message, I was like, oh, that's that school that never got back to me. But how did they get my information about being a theology teacher? And this was with Tom Malone, the principal, you know, and he called and he was like, oh, somehow our president got your resume from your uncle, which I still don't know how my uncle had my resume. It's not a common thing that I hand out to family members. And then there we were in
Georgia. Isn't this the uncle that
went to
school with and rode the bus to school with?
Yes. Yes. And said he rode the bus with him, but they lived in totally different areas. So that never happened. Then end of July, we both met each other. At orientation, I had tickets to see Beyonce, and I couldn't go. And I instead had to go to orientation. I was a little bit bitter about that, but it was at that orientation that we realized that we would be friends with each other. And we, so that's how we started out at the school. And we weren't even teaching like the same grades, right? Like, you were teaching
seniors. I had mostly taught seniors.
And I was teaching sophomores at first.
Yeah, we went at that conference, so. Well, we must have started to collaborate. Well, obviously, we became friends. And then eventually this idea for an interdisciplinary project emerges.
Yeah.
Do you remember how we started the project?
I feel like
it must have been when you shifted to teaching seniors.
I shifted to teaching seniors.
And that was social justice and world religion.
I know a precursor to this project that we both got really excited about. And I was like, oh, this is something that we can do.
I don't remember this.
So I led the retreats at the school, as you know, and you would often go on those retreats with me, like for a couple of days, we'd be away out of the classroom. And we needed to plan something for our students. And it was the 20th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide. Do you remember this? And I got super excited about it because I thought it would be a great thing to talk about with students. And so we came up with all of these different interdisciplinary project.
So this was in 2014.
Yes, because this is like Greg Jones's class.
Okay.
So we were all away, and Dominic shows up in the story. Dominic was the one who did all of it. Dominic and I think Maggie, right? Because there was all of these poems by...
I remember this now.
Yes,
you describing the poems and the two of them. Yes, I remember this.
Yes. All of these poems. And then I had this take from the like social justice theology perspective. And you had the take from like, you know...
You mean I didn't want to do it from a theology perspective?
No, you did not want to take the theology perspective, as would be a common theme throughout our friendship and colleagueship. I don't even know if colleagueship is a word.
It's a word now.
Yeah, so that is how I originally think of, like, the impetus for me caring about a project like this. That was, like, my first foray into something like that.
Yeah, I just remember wanting to do – I wanted to try project-based learning because I felt like I had read so much about it. I felt like it held promise for our students because I feel like my big critique of the school was that it was too traditional, that the students were bored. They were pretty much just focusing on academic. We've talked about this so many times. We, like, hyper-focused on traditional discipline, academic disciplines. And I didn't have a whole lot of activities like clubs and the arts. It just was, there was a little bit, but it was lacking. And I felt like if we could just tweak the academic programming to be more interdisciplinary and project-based that it and connected to real world issues in Baltimore and beyond, I thought we could just engage them in a different way. Didn't realize how difficult this would be, but it was worth it, I think.
And I think there was also a willingness from administration for this to happen and for it to be Baltimore focused following the death of Freddie Gray and the uprising, because that was the year before we did this project.
Right.
And I think, I mean, one of the takeaways from, again, like I haven't thought about this Rwanda project in 5+ years, but I think one of the takeaways was, you know, students learned from it, but they didn't necessarily make the connections to their own life. And then following the uprising, the conversations that we had with students were very much centered on their own experience of Baltimore and their experience of what people thought of Baltimore, like talking about how, you know, there was this for days, there was a split screen of Anderson Cooper on a corner in Baltimore with like a building on fire when it had really been like one night that there was anything like that happening. And so I think that it was a moment for students to take ownership of their place in Baltimore and to really be willing to make a change in Baltimore. And yeah, I mean, you're always the driver in.
So we launched, because that was 2015. So we launched this the following spring.
Yes, we spent the summer of 2015 planning this.
Right, because we got the curriculum grant.
Yes.
And I just remember walking into Tom's office and pitching the idea. We had written a proposal to get the money, and I just remember him saying, but he was so, obviously he was open to us trying things, but he was like, I've just never heard of people trying to do all these things at once or do it in this way. Cause remember we wanted that there to be like a blended learning component where they did sort of self-paced modules online and then PBL with project-based learning, which we hadn't done yet at Cristo Rey, and connecting it to the real world. And I think, I mean, now I still think he's wrong because I think what has happened in the city proves our point. I think he questioned the focus on water justice.
Oh, I mean, every time we see anything about water justice, we will send it to each other and we'll say, look, we were so ahead of the curve thinking about this. And this is
this
is also right as like news about Flint was happening.
Yes. That's why we focused on water. Okay.
Yeah.
And because I was sort of at that point, I was really starting to get into Baltimore history and I had learned a fair amount about, I mean, at one point we had a state-of-the-art water system. Now it's essentially, you know, it's over a century years old, 100 years old. And the city can't keep up with the maintenance.
And
there was like privatization efforts.
Yeah.
Veolia, that company wanted to buy out our water system, which sounds pretty crazy.
And the maintenance and upkeep that has happened, we didn't have the infrastructure to support, you know, especially in the last two or three years, it's come out about, you know, all of these wireless water meters that you can't read through the lead.
The astronomical water bills were a problem then. Then that only increased. Yes. I mean, that's a huge thing still in the media, right?
Yes.
In Baltimore, at least. Because I remember the one student did a pitch for the Bay of Gaddy Center.
Uh-huh.
Didn't their building go into foreclosure because of unpaid water bills or something like that?
Yeah.
So how did we, I mean, in hindsight, I mean, why did we think that water, we were excited, but like, why did we think it would excite the students, or did we not think it would? And we felt like we could get them excited about this topic.
We wanted to try to get them excited about the topic. I think the thing that always, like, it's so funny to think about now, was students never understood that, like, we teachers were constantly talking to each other about what we were doing, and they were always surprised when, like, something in my class would come up in your class. Or, like, Maggie, the English teacher, when she was like, oh, I'm doing this book, A Thousand Splendid Suns. And I was like, okay, I'll wait to talk about Islam in my world religions class until right before you start that book. So then there's some overlap of information there. And I think that they were always surprised to hear, like, how teachers collaborated with each other. And so that summer, there was a number of things. I think at one point we had talked about maybe doing a project on immigration. One of the impetuses for doing the water focus was, it was right around the time that Pope Francis had written
Laudato
Si, or On Our Common Home, which was his papal encyclical that made waves in Catholic circles about thinking about the environment and environmental justice. And so we wanted that was going to be one of the main texts of how I would approach it with students from a Catholic social teaching model.
And I brought in, you know, not just Baltimore history, but we looked at what was happening in Flint.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just generally talking about human rights, about access, you know, a lot of the students were compelled by the idea that, like, should water even cost anything? So how did we pitch? I'm trying to remember how we pitched it to the students. We did like an entry event.
We spent the whole summer planning it. We spent 3/4 of the year, school year, like, hyping it up to students. Remember
that
we
would have started it earlier.
Yeah. Remember, even like, we had, we gave them extra credit during the summer beforehand.
Which I no longer believe in extra credit. So,
I mean, we could, that could be a whole other story for a conversation. We gave them extra credit the summer beforehand to go to Artscape because the theme
you have a better
water.
Memory than I do.
The theme was water.
And we were like, see?
Yeah. We're like, it's going to be important, guys. Like, come and do this. So Artscape is this big annual summer festival in Baltimore with, like, music and
visual
arts.
It's the largest free arts festival, supposedly, in America. Actually.
And, like, it always happens to fall on, like, the most ungodly hot weekend in Baltimore, like, without...
Yeah, it's a curse.
Without fail. And so, like, we went to Artscape and saw that the theme was about water, and, like, sent a message to the entire senior class during the summertime between junior and senior year. And we're like, go and send us a picture of you doing something at Artscape and we'll give you extra credit. I think, like, 3 kids did it. And I think we forgot about it until, like, the very end when they were like, you need to give us extra credit on something. And we were like, okay, sure. And
somebody just finished their project.
And it was, of course, like, the students who were, like, above and beyond, right? It was like the valedictorian. Like, she was one of the people to have done it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had an event. This was going to be their whole fourth quarter. And so we spent time. We had an event that we were like, we're going to bring them into this, and we're going to.
Yeah, because we modeled this off of like best practices of PBL from the Buck Institute. So you have an entry event to build up some excitement. I do think they were excited. And we were, I mean, at the time I thought tasking them with, because they had to answer the drive, work toward understanding and answering the driving question, which I can't remember the exact wording, but it was about how we can value, like creating an actual action plan to ensure that water is valued as a human right in Baltimore. And we wanted them to build a website, right? And
We spent a lot of time.
And create a pitch, not actually implement the plan, but create a plan and share it.
Yeah.
All right, and we had a panel of experts.
We had a panel of experts.
Experts in quotes.
Yeah. And we had a prize.
All right.
We
scholarship.
Early on, we talked to. I mean, the school itself is run by. Keeps its lights on through donations from outside investors, outside individuals who we talked to our director of development, and we were like, what's the possibility that we could get some scholarships for students? And we said the winning team, because they worked in teams, would each member would win $500 to put towards costs of school, which that became a driver for some of them for sure.
So what do you think? We can talk about the challenges, of course, but what do you think the students got from this? I mean, I wanted to talk about this because I see so many. We were doing this, what was this, 5 years, 6 years ago?
6 years ago.
I just see so many schools being organized around.
5 years ago.
With a project-based learning model that's connected to, you know, and it's place-based and interdisciplinary.
Yeah.
And we actually tried it. So that has shaped a lot of my other work that I'm doing now. But, and I'm seeing it pop up in my school leadership program. We just had Michael Fullen. He's a really well-known education writer and researcher. And he was like going all in on quote deeper learning. And I just feel like we were actually trying that out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and that is
in hindsight, you know, we should have done some things differently, but I'm glad we did it.
And like, you're not going to take credit for this, but like you are the driver of us thinking about this, the pedagogy and the impact that it could have on the institution, and connecting it to trends that were happening in the education world.
And they're still doing this. Our goal was for this to be a capstone project that would continue. Obviously it wouldn't always be about water. So what it continued, right?
It did.
I left before you did.
I mean, it took a year off, from being interdisciplinary, but then my final year at the school, we did make return to this interdisciplinary model, where there was presentations and like an action component, and students had to do this, you know, capstone work.
But they got to choose a topic of.
They got to choose a topic of their own. Yeah. I don't know what were the successes. I think that it gave students an insight to this growing issue around water access and water justice. And I think it expanded their understanding of what that meant.
I feel like other concepts, I mean, we talked about environmental racism, for example.
Yeah.
I regret this, but we didn't have complete control of the curriculum. I mean, they didn't know a lot about Baltimore's history.
Yeah.
I think they learned a bit more about that.
Yeah.
And I hope that has endured. It got them to, well, if the teams were doing all the components of the assignment, they got to engage with community organizations.
Mm-hmm.
We really right? We tried to encourage them to contact experts.
Yeah. I mean, we went to City Hall with them.
Didn't we bring Aaron? Didn't we teach them how to interview? Am I making that up?
No, that was the
follow-up. That was a different project?
Okay, okay. I know what you did with them.
Yeah.
No, but we went to City Hall. Remember there was a session in City Hall about water bills.
Oh, yeah.
And so we took a group, like, it was probably like a group of 15
when Brandon
students.
Scott was on city council, yeah. Not the mayor.
Yeah. And we took a group of students and they got to see a session in, you know, taking place and talk to people.
And remember we went out on a, didn't we? We went out on a boat with Chesapeake Bay Foundation.
Oh yeah, that was great. And we wanted to do that with students, but the timing just never seemed to work out. That was great. And then, you know, it was something that was great, was we brought in a student. We brought in a student's parents who worked for the Department of Public Works. And she explained what the whole process of getting water, you know.
And how it's cleaned. And
yes.
Yeah.
And I think, I think that was such a success because, like you said, you know, most of the students are from under-resourced areas. And I think that there was a certain stereotype that faculty and staff bought into about who our students' parents were. And then to have parent come in and present on her professional work and make the connection, I think that luckily opened up quite a few people to the reality of like the many gifts that our parents actually had
partnering with the families. Well, that definitely, that's a different form of success. I think it pushed the school to rethink the community members we already had.
Yeah. And what about learn from them?
Yeah, so they connected with organizations. We had them build websites.
That if we're going to talk about challenges, like I would talk about building websites with students and. Just
right.
Or the challenge was the timing because they had to complete this. This was a graduation requirement to complete this project. Yeah. And, you know, we asked a lot of the students and if they didn't give us what we were asking, we asked them to go back and do it again, which they weren't used to doing.
Right. To actually seeking mastery as opposed to just completing something.
Yes.
I remember the project spreadsheets.
Yeah.
It was intense. So we definitely stressed them out for sure. I think hopefully, you know, some of that was like a healthy level of stress and struggle.
And we stressed ourselves out in the process.
Yeah. I remember losing sleep over this because we wanted to pull everything off for the showcase night with the guest panel. What other challenges? Like, because I know you all changed, after I left, you changed it to have the students focus, like choose their topic.
Yeah.
I think that was probably, I think we had a survey or we interviewed students about the experience. And a lot of them said, while it was cool to learn about the water issues and explore that in deeper ways, they wish they could have just chosen their own topic, which at the time I thought what we were doing was super student-centered. And I think... to a great extent it was.
Yeah.
But the actual topic came from us.
Yeah.
And we were passionate about it. Were they? Not so much.
Yeah. Agreed. And I think that, you know, again, I wish we had informed the rest of the faculty even more about what we were doing, right? So that they could see that if we are working towards this, and this has become more of a thing with the new way that they're doing it, if we're how are we building up the skills so that It's not a mad rush to teach all the skills plus the content plus then have students produce the work. And, you know, I think so often.
Right. Presentations, for example, there should have been presentation skills scaffolded throughout the 4 years so that it wasn't such a heavy lift to produce, you know, a compelling pitch as seniors. For sure.
So how does this experience, how has this experience informed how you teach now? And like, that's a, you,
well, my current school, Friends School of Baltimore, I have created a Baltimore history elective. It's called Unbreakable Baltimore. And we look at case studies about how the city's leaders have responded to challenges. And actually water is one of the ones we do. I'm shifting into an admin role, but I'm still going to keep my elective courses. And then obviously, as you know, on the side, I've been leading a team to try to open a new public charter school, and project-based learning is at the core of that. And I don't think I would have fully understood it without trying it myself. In grad school, right, PBL, it's been around for a while, but it's really gaining traction now. Like where I'm doing my school leadership studies at Penn, they just launched a PBL certificate program, for example. So it's getting attention. There's not a ton of research about its effectiveness yet. But I think when you've seen schools like High Tech High do it well, you do see the results. Big Picture Learning Network. And having students learn about where they live and to meet people that they wouldn't have met otherwise, and to engage in the community, I think will pay dividends. I think we're seeing our students through their internship programming and through projects like this, they have more confidence and are getting great jobs. And I think we'll emerge. We're just seeing this group like come up as young professionals, right? In Baltimore, post-college now. I think of like, Lemuel Bourne.
And I think, I have since exited school life. I work now in a nonprofit, the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. And I work with teachers, though. That's the main programming that I do. And I want teachers to see that how important encounter is, and that's not just with the material in their classrooms, but with the other students in the classroom, with the teachers. And then, like you were saying, this place-based understanding of it too. And so the more that we can create opportunities for teachers and students to encounter each other, to encounter where they live, then the more bought in they will be to creating a better future for all of those things.
I agree with that. That's a great way to put it. I think that type of learning is what endures, because it was social. It involves something real that in theory they care about if you're pulling it off well. And just because the finished products don't always come out as polished, that's not really the point.
No.
It's those encounters and experiences throughout the process that matter.
Yeah, and students can continue to learn from that when they're long gone from the classroom.
And when their teachers are long gone from school.
And when their teachers are long gone from school. All right. Thanks, Travis.
Thanks. This was fun.
And then we're good.